The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
The beach, the day after Memorial Day. It's still busy. Temperature 80, partly cloudy skies. You're looking at Miramar Beach, Florida, the site of not only fun and frivolity, but a lot of conflict inside the hotel right we're looking straight at it. We are here at SEC Spring Meetings, where last year we all said, David Ubbin, it would be a fait accompli. By the time we got back here, everything would be decided. The SEC would be playing 9 conference games just in time to welcome Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma and Texas are here represented, not the head coaches, yep, but the administrators. But there's still a lot of controversy about how many games will be played next year. Welcome to David, who is joining us from The Athletic. We'll talk to a number of other writers and coaches and athletic directors, including Kirby Smart, a little bit later on. But David, thank you for being here. Take us through the lead-up to this moment as coaches are now in meetings with administrators trying to figure out the future.
Yeah, I mean, literally right now we've got coaches in a room talking about it. I think the 8 versus 9 debate has been pretty heated over time. I think there's a lot of split loyalties, a lot of things that are going to factor into coaches' decisions. It's a complicated issue, but money has a way of uncomplicating issues, and if the money is there and the money is right, I think you're going to see that decision come down. But I think, you know, this has been something that they talked about for, what, 2-3 years now, and Greg Sankey, you know, mentioned on Monday night, it's time to land the plane. We've been circling the airport for years now. That's a lot of wasted gas, and here we are. I think, you know, I don't know that they'll get to the finish line this week, but I think you can leave this week. I feel pretty confident you'll have some level of, like, where are we at?
Yeah, about an hour ago, I bumped into an SEC head coach inside the lobby, and naturally the subject came up, the 8 or 9 games, and he said, I don't know why you guys, meaning us, ask the coaches how they feel, because they're not going to listen to us anyway. And I thought it was a very honest comment, even though the Nick Saban has been very outspoken, and I know you heard what he had to say earlier. So for those who have not been keeping up in real time reports from here, what did Nick Saban say? Because it's very interesting how his position has shifted.
You know, I think you look at the landscape of college sports right now, and coaches are not happy. These are the guys that are making the most money, that have the most power on campus to do the things that they want, but roster management is difficult. And I think, you know, the reality of NIL is that it's not the mom and pop shops and the local car dealerships. It has morphed into pay for play. And Nick Saban's talking about, hey, if this is what it's going to be, then we got to figure out some sort of system. And you know, does that mean making them employees? Well, there's a lot of hurdles that come with that. But he said, I wouldn't be against that. You know, it's better than the current system. But he did offer a warning. He said, you know, he called back to his comments from 2012, where he said, is this what we want football to be? Well, he was talking about spread offenses then. We're talking about some existential issues now of what is the sport actually going to be. And that was sort of the question that he asked, is, hey, all these things are changing, all, you know, between guys leaving and the transfer portal and immediate eligibility and tampering and all these issues. Is this what we want college football to be? I think most coaches in 2012 would have said yes. And in 2023, I think the answer to his rhetorical question is probably no.
But it's interesting, David, I believe Saban is being honest on one level. He's an old school guy. He's about to be 72 years old. He grew up in a time when you went to a university because you believed in that university. We all know that's, of course, still the same. But everybody, it isn't like he's not profiting either. He's making $12 million a year as a head football coach. So I don't see him, nor do I see any of those other coaches, giving the money back, saying, let's try to go back to something that's more representative of what we all got in this for.
That's sort of the complicated issue. We heard a lot today of coaches talking about, you know, horses out of barns and toothpaste out of tube and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, but you could say that about the entire structure of college sports as well, of like, well, everyone says, well, we don't have the money. Where are we going to find the money to pay the players? Well, if you redrew up the entire economic structure of college sports, you could find some money to pay players if you really wanted to. And I think that is the question. As you said, nobody's going to be writing checks and giving back money and moving money around. It's not going to happen.
I wish I could share with the audience a picture of what I'm about to describe, especially for you on radio. But, you know, we are in the back of this hotel, but probably 30 or 40 yards, maybe 30 yards from where we are, maybe less, there is a bar. And in the back of the bar about an hour and a half ago sat Kirby Smart, and I may miss him, Eli Drinkwood, Sam Pittman, Mark Stoops, Jimbo Fisher, Hugh Freeze. And they were not the most important people at the table. The most important person at that table was someone that a lot of folks would not recognize. But in the middle of this bar table was Jimmy Sexton. And I bring this up because right there is what is happening. That one man at that table has unleveled the playing field when it comes to coaching salaries, or maybe he's leveled it where everybody's making $8 to $12 million. But you have to pay those coaches. So therefore, I'm not trying to give a primer here in my first day as Professor Paul, but you know, schools have to pay for all that too. So that's why they make deals with conferences who make deals with people like ESPN.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Saban talked about, hey, all the money that we're making is being reinvested in the program. Well, where is that money being reinvested? A lot of it is coaches and assistant coaches. Like, that's the reality. So you can say it's not a business, or that it's, you know, it's not a profit, or as Nick would say, a revenue-producing exercise. I forget exactly what the term that he was using was. But ultimately, like, there's a ton of money around, and so that profit is going somewhere. In a lot of ways, it's going to coaches, and that's just because you've got to spend that money. Coaches and facilities would be the number one and two probably expenses over the last 10 years. I think I want to say Bobby Bowden in 1997, 98 was like the first $1 million coach, and now I think there's like $80 million coaches a year. So
that's exactly just right. I remember being in Gainesville down there speaking at an event. As the story broke, I was in about to go by and see him. Steve Spurrier was the second coach to make $1 million. $1 million. And listen, folks, very few of us will ever see that kind of money in our lifetime cumulatively, and $1 million gets you nothing out of college football staff right now.
I mean, how many $1 million coordinators do we have now? Which, like 10, 15 years ago, I mean, that was borderline unthinkable. I can't remember when the first $1 million coordinator was, but now, I mean, you have your $10 million coaches, and that money is only going to go up because the market is going to keep going up. The money is going to keep exploding. The TV networks keep pouring money into the conferences and to the schools, and like you said, it's got to go somewhere, and it's not going to the players.
David, on this, and Kirby Smart said this is the most overhyped conversation, this 8 versus 9. It is and it isn't. The reason why it is because this was something that we were all waiting to get the news today. Okay, if you're a South Carolina fan, we're playing this school and this school and that school. Now,
the three permanent. I think that's the thing that people get caught up with, the 8 versus 9, is I think the three permanents is almost more important than the total numbers.
Right.
Is you have, you know, with the 8, you'd have the 1 permanent and the 7 rotating, and you know, it doesn't really matter kind of how often you play guys or whatever, but the three permanents has been a very contentious issue, and I think that is where, like, the 8 versus 9 is really, that's where kind of the meat is. What people really want to see is who are we going to be seeing every single year.
It's always weird to cover the people that you work for, but I'll try to do it because I think it's being honest. Inside this hotel, the blame is being put on ESPN, saying, hey, ESPN has a deal with the SEC, a deal that was consummated, by the way, probably in December of 19. That shows you how far back it was. It doesn't even go into effect until next year, but the deal was done. At the time, Texas and Oklahoma were not part of the conversation. And by the way, there was a clause in there, as there is in any new contract. The old SEC-CBS contract did not have this one in. But that's what happens when it's
lawyers. Long-term contracts.
You got too many lawyers involved. but, you know, the blame is that, well, ESPN should pay more. And I don't speak for anybody but myself. But that seems to be, unless I'm missing something, and I was around an ESPN executive earlier, and I was dying to ask that person, can you enlighten us? But I try not to interview the person I directly report to. What is this about?
Well, I think, you know, as much as Greg Sankey wants to say, hey, the money doesn't lead, it follows, like, that runs
what does that mean?
That runs counter to every decision that we've seen in college sports over the last 10, 20, 100 years,
okay.
Right? So, you know, if the money is not going to be there and they're just going to play nine games for fairness or because it's good for the sport, there's going to be a lot of coaches and administrators in the league that are saying, well, what are we doing this for? Why? I'd rather keep my home game. I'd rather get a guaranteed win to make my coach happy, make me less likely to have to pay a buyout to a coach I'm going to have to fire when he goes 6-6 instead of 7-5 and the fans are, you know, beating down my door. If the money's there and you're saying, well, this is an additional $5 million in your pocket, that ninth game becomes a lot easier to swallow, even if you're at a place that's still trying to get to bowl eligibility. But if you're not, it's the upside is really, really negligible if you're not trying to impress the playoff committee, which, you know, half the team, half the league probably is, and half the league doesn't care.
I'll go ahead and unbury the lead here, but there seems to be some movement toward a short gap. Let's do it for a year. And then we'll regroup, and maybe everybody will be in a better mood by the time we get here. David, I don't know where it goes from here, but I know we're off and running. We appreciate you being our leadoff guest. Oftentimes, a leadoff guest is never seen or heard from again. So
We'll see. No, I think I appreciate it, and I think the whole issue is crazy because it's like if the AFC played 16 games and the NFC played 18.
Yeah.
And that's what college sports is. Nobody's in charge. It's a feature, not a bug. Makes it more interesting to write about.
But if you're the SEC, you have every reason to believe you'll get away with it, because they have so far.
Title's top.
Great to see you, David.
Thank you.
We have a lot of guests, including the president of the University of Georgia later on, the head football coach of the University of Georgia. It's an all-Georgia day, but Brett McMurphy will give us more of the nuances of what has been going on inside as we are live in Miramar Beach, Florida at the SEC Spring Meetings.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back at the SEC Spring Meetings, a quiet Tuesday, day after the holiday, and a lot of activity going on. You heard some of that in our first conversation. Right now, there are serious meetings going on. All the coaches are now in meetings. The basketball coaches were the last to arrive. I was working out this morning. Not that that's a news break.
Breaking news.
But I was with Eric Musselman in the gym. Like, what are you guys doing here? All the football. He said, basketball coaches don't start till 1. You wonder why they have a complex. We are chatting with Brett McMurphy, our old friend who used to be at ESPN and then became a – you became somewhat what did you become on Twitter? Because every time there was a news break somewhere, you would get ripped off and it became somewhat of a thing on social media for a long time.
Yeah, well, our good buddy Steve Levy, after I'd been laid off, I broke – Scott Frost was leaving UCF to go to Nebraska, and he broke into the broadcast of the UCF American Conference title game said reports Scott Frost is going to Nebraska. First reported by our own Brett McMurphy. Unfortunately, I've been laid off a few months earlier. So,
By the way, I am not, just for the record, I'm not laughing at the fact.
I told Steve I appreciate it. He kept me in the news, and I still owe him a case of beer. But thanks for bringing that up.
That's funny because I mean you were. Now it's a zillion-dollar business at ESPN to be the guy that breaks the first whatever. You were at the vanguard of that in college football, though.
Yeah, it's really changed. Obviously, social media, there's so much stuff. Something breaks, everybody's going to confirm it, follow up with it. Where, you know, the further back you went, you actually owned the story for a small period of time. You and I, going back even further, the newspaper days, you actually owned it for a day. Those days are long gone. And
People don't when I started in the newspaper business over 40 years ago, you broke a big story, and part of the charm of that, you'd sit around at lunch instead of following it up, you'd be out to lunch at a bar and say, the other guys had the quota. Yeah. I mean, that was a big deal. Now it's a 2-second thing on Twitter. But what I do find interesting, though, and I wonder if anyone else cares. So
probably not.
You break a story saying there's going to be a new bowl game in Portugal. 24/7 picks it up, and they say, you know, first reported by Brett McMurphy of Action. Is there anyone reading that cares about that other than the writers
involved? People in the industry do. I think we all take pride in our job.
Okay.
And, you know, look, I'm not going to break every story. I'm not going to break half of the stories. But, you know, when I do, it's nice when other people recognize
it. It's a new thing. Collegiality than there used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked for the Inferior newspaper for a long time. Until the two merged. And I could break the Watergate story and the other paper wouldn't credit me.
Right, yeah. Or they'll say reports.
Yeah, they'll just come up with their own story.
Reportedly, Nixon is resigning. Yeah, or something like that.
But today, everybody's friendly. Like, I guess let me quit talking about.
Yeah, before everyone.
I've been meaning to ask you that for 7 years.
Change the channel. Well, I appreciate it.
I should have just called you. Brett, what's going on here? I mean, what is really going on here?
So I saw you talk to David. He hit a lot of the points. What kind of struck me is last night, Greg Sankey's nearing 10 years as commissioner. Last night is the first time that he had a group of reporters, myself included, that kind of got to talk to him the day before the meeting started. And having done this as long as I have, to me, it was kind of, he wanted to be open. He wanted to answer any questions. By the way, his helicopter is circling right now, in case I'm giving out any secrets. But also, I think he wanted to kind of present his case, if you will, and specifically the 8-game versus 9-game SEC debate. Now, he did not say he favored 8 games. He did not say he favored 9 games. But when we asked him about the benefits of 9 games, he was very enthusiastic about all the reasons why. Keep the secondary rivalries. Play those games every year. Auburn, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee. If you don't play 9 games, those games are not played every year. The passionate fan bases. There's more passion involved at SEC games. If you have 9 games, you have an additional game. Those sort of things. It's almost like he wanted to get that out there. I really believe that's what he wants. There's a lot of conflicting information.
Do you think the commissioner wants 9?
Gave him true serum and made him answer, I believe he wants 9.
I mean, isn't that what he's essentially been selling for the last year?
Yes. And with 16 teams, why would you not have 9?
Yeah. So what happened?
What happened?
Why are we? Why have we not heard an announcement of 9 games? And why does everybody think it's going to be 8?
You need 8 schools. Like he's told us, you need 8 schools. And apparently right now they're at 7 or fewer. If it's a 7-7 tie, it doesn't pass.
Well,
so the presidents will vote on that Friday. I think they'll get there. I think Sankey will
so you still think that this is all just playing out in media time as opposed to what's going to happen in that room?
Right. But the presidents can't do anything until they vote at the end of the week. So all these discussions will build up to it. There's some conflicting information on, you know, does ESPN pay more with a 9-game schedule or an 8-game schedule?
Well, I'm glad we're talking to you as a former ES, because this is the awkward part of
for you,
because I brought it up a minute ago, and I mean, you hear certain things, and you know, ESPN is a company going through a lot of changes, as every other major corporation.
Sure, a lot of challenges.
So, is it as simple as if ESPN says, "Okay, here's a number"? we're going to throw this into the kitty. Does that change everyone's mind who's been telling us for 2 days now, it's not about the money?
Yeah, I think if they had a definitive number from ESPN that the number would be greater playing 9 games compared to 8, I don't think we'd be at this point. I think it already would have been done. I hear conflicting information. I hear that ESPN does not require to pay more for a 9th game compared to 8 games. They're only required to pay by adding additional teams, which right. they did with OU and Texas. So maybe there was an understanding there that there would be more revenue with a 9th or 8th game. And so because of that, I think that's where we're stuck on it. You're not going to add more games right. for less money.
Right.
Because you're adding
talking
an
about
additional
the difference
loss.
Between Alabama and Southern Miss versus Alabama and potentially Florida.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah, and Southern Miss is great, but they're
right.
not.
And on the back end, you should make more money because your TV revenue is going to be more valuable. Your inventory is going to be more valuable, but it may not.
And I believe ESPN wants 9 games. I think the determination is, you know, what is it worth to them?
Right. And they're making, again, they have to make a lot of tough decisions right now.
Right.
Regarding the SEC and other leagues.
The ESPN is no longer negotiating against CBS or somebody else.
Right.
They own the property.
They own it, right. So is it just, we like you a lot, here's a bunch of money? That's not how it works,
no.
unfortunately,
yeah,
for us. But, yeah, so that's a decision that has to be made. Ultimately, and Greg talked about, you know, we are the leaders, talking about the SEC. SEC's the leaders in college athletics. They're at the forefront. We should not stand still. I mean, he's basically mapping it out for you that the SEC should go to 9. Here are the reasons. And he referenced the, you know, been circling the plane, it's time to land.
Right.
Okay, you're not circling the plane, make a decision to stay at 8. You're doing that because you want to move on to get to 9. Now, what a lot of coaches said, what David brought up, the coaches have no say in this. They have their opinions. But ultimately, I think 9 works best, but the president.
And we will talk to the president of the University of Georgia a little bit later on, so we'll get some real insight into the people that really, and Jerry, more
like his opinion means 100 times more than anyone else you have on the stage.
He is not just a president. I mean, this guy is a guy that sits in that room with the commissioner and is as important as any. There are probably three presidents who carry the most sway, and he is among that troika, not to use an old Russian phrase there.
They're Googling, right?
but other than that, the NIL question's out there. What else are we going to learn this week, if anything?
I think that's the biggest thing. I think what's kind of fascinating is, you know, this morning we got to talk to, you know, half a dozen 6, 7, 8 coaches. And there's kind of a theme that more and more of them are let's go to the NFL model. What does that mean? Compensating players.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to call it paying players. And that's where I think the SEC and Big Ten is headed. You know, there is no more Power 5. It's the Power 2, the Middle 3, and the Group 5. And basically, if you're in the top 2, and I've done on your radio show, King Kong and Godzilla, whichever monster you prefer to be with the SEC or the Big Ten, you will have the resources financially to be able to do that, which gives you huge advantage in recruiting, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that's kind of the way we're going. I mean, Nick Saban basically said, let's unionize it and make it like the NFL. Everybody has the same rules. You know,
sounds like a guy who grew up in the coal mines of West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. But the biggest concern with the coaches is, can a 3-loss SEC team get in a 12-team playoff? We don't know till we get to 12 teams.
Right.
So that's their concern by going to 9 games. Half the league will have an additional loss.
Brett McMurphy, Action Network. Formerly our Brett McMurphy from ESPN.
I'll always be your own.
One of the greats. We will take a break. Thank you very much, Brett. In case you have any young children in the room, let me warn you, Mike Griffith is next.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back live at the beach. Well, we're technically not quite on the beach. We're on the marsh. But that is the beach you're looking at. And we are back here. And always great to say hello to our good friend, Mike Griffith. Mike, before we get to Kirby Smart, who is here, and we'll talk to him later on. I kept looking because I didn't have great access, but I saw a few Instagram posts from Florence and Naples and Rome of Saban. As much as you talk about Saban on your Twitter feed and whenever you're here, I'm assuming you were on the 14-day sojourn to Italy recently.
It would have been nice, but unfortunately, we're busy with covering Georgia. They're putting together the number one recruiting class in the country. But listen, you got to give Saban a break here. I mean, when you've lost two games or more three out of the last 4 years, you need a break. You need a little rust and a little R&R. He looked great in there. I think he looked recharged. And Paul, I think Alabama will challenge in the West next year. I don't think you just give it to LSU. I think Bama's got to...
Hold on a second.
Well, we don't know who the quarterback is, right? And we don't know who the coordinators are. But you got to give Nick Saban some credit for what he's done over the years.
You're talking to the Saban whisperer here. You say that, and we'll talk to Brian Kelly a little bit later on as well. But you made that statement as if Alabama is trying to come back from a 5-7 season. I mean, they did finish number 5 in the country, Griff.
They did, and with Bryce Young, I think probably the best player in college football, that was what I had anticipated, was top 5 or more. I was a little surprised to see them lose to LSU the way they did. I was surprised to see the streak against Tennessee end. But, you know, look, that's old news. The new news is that Nick Saban is...
He's refreshed.
He's refreshed, and he's taking issue with the NIL because, doggone it, like he said, this is not the NFL. This is about, you know, educational opportunities, and the money goes back into the program. And part of that money goes back to him. He gets $12 million a year. So, you know, I understand where he's coming from. It's not the NFL model. The money goes back into the schools. He talked about that, how it helps other programs, and it certainly helps coaching staffs as well for the hard work that they do.
So what are you saying? I mean, Saban, is from what I understand, is talking about today. He's talking about how the future of college football is threatening. This is an existential threat, but he's still profiting, right?
Well, I think he is, and when you look at everything he's done career-wise, I think you've got to give him his due, Paul. You know, and does he deserve to be the highest-paid coach? Does he add the most value to the program? At any coach in college football, I would say that Kirby Smart probably does. Based on the last two championships, most sports, if you've won the title, certainly if you're a two-time defending champion, that usually constitutes you being viewed as the greatest coach in that sport. This is a little bit different. And there's a lot of other...
But Mike, I mean, we're talking... I mean, I don't argue with anything you've said about Kirby. In fact, I've echoed some of your statements here. But Saban... The value that Nick Saban brings to his program is, to me, unchallenged. I'm not sure how you could say that Kirby Smart has exceeded that.
Well, that's a good point, but I would point this out to you, too. Georgia hadn't won a national championship in 40 years before Kirby Smart. I think Gene Stallings won a national championship at Alabama, and I'm pretty sure, you know, that other coaches, I think Mike Dubose even won an SEC title there. My point is, there's been a lot of other coaches that have won titles at Alabama, and they'll tell you that, and I know I covered the program, you did too, there's a rich history. It's hard not to win titles at Alabama when you look at the commitment.
I think every coach since Bryant has at one point 110 games.
Yeah.
Even Dubose won 10 games on the SEC title. Mike Shula won 10 games.
Yeah. But, you know, there's other issues going
on. Mike Price didn't, but he never coached again.
There's other issues going on here, too.
Okay,
I mean, Vanderbilt, you know, I saw Vanderbilt won a baseball championship. You know, the rule about speeding up the game, Vanderbilt seemed very interested in that today. I think the Vanderbilt coach, Clark Lee, spoke. The faster the game, the faster that you can make the game, I think the better it is for Vanderbilt. I thought that was a salient point.
Okay.
So you want to speed these games up.
Back to Kirby Smart, which seems to be the main reason you're
That's
here.
One of the reasons I'm here, yeah.
Yeah. forget today. This is just media chatter. But what are you picking up in relation to the upcoming season and this program from him?
I think Kirby's downplaying the success a little bit. I think he's used the word luck more than once. He said they got lucky against Missouri. He said if they played TCU, the game would, you know, five times the game would fall five different ways. He said they got lucky against Ohio State. What he's trying to point out is, you know, even though the gap may appear to be large with Georgia having not lost a regular season game since, 2020? They haven't lost a regular season game since Florida and Jacksonville. Haven't lost at home since 2019. I think the point he's trying to make is even though they've won all these regular season games and might appear to be a dynasty in the making with back-to-back titles, the gap really isn't as big as maybe some people think. I mean, Missouri had them down 10 points in Columbia last year, so I think he's humbling his program. Obviously, it's been a difficult offseason, and as Georgia goes for this three-peat, which hasn't been done since the 1930s by Minnesota, I think Kirby's goal is to humble his program and keep his players, you know, hungry because he's not sure how they're going to report back. They've got new quarterback. They have to replace their best defensive lineman. They have to replace, you know, I think arguably their biggest playmaker, two of their biggest playmakers in the secondary. There's a lot of work to be done at Georgia as well.
Talking to Mike here, Mike, in fairness to your original point, though, I mean, I believe somebody asked him at the press conference today, you know, if he feels like his program has surpassed Saban. I thought he gave a very smart, nuanced, well-prepared answer. The answer isn't what's interesting. The fact the question's being asked.
Sure. I think it's a good question, and I think part of the Kirby has a lot of respect for Alabama because he helped build that program. Yeah. He was a part of four of Nick's national championships as a defensive coordinator and assistant coach. I think Kirby takes a lot of pride in what Alabama was able to accomplish when he was Nick's lead recruiter and as his defensive coordinator. A lot of those titles, a lot of those best defenses ever built at Alabama were built by Kirby Smart. I think even Alabama fans would tell you, Paul, that Kirby Smart is it was the best defensive coordinator Nick had, and there's a long list of them to choose from, by the way. So I think that...
And I thought we were with Kirby 3 weeks ago, and where Barkley was in the conversation, and somehow Saban, I don't remember, Saban got into the conversation, and Kirby surprised me. It didn't surprise me in terms of what he said, but surprised me that it was on his mind. He started really waxing poetic.
You want to pay tribute. You never know how long a coach is going to be in the game, and I think about Steve Spurrier all the time. You know, Steve Spurrier was only at Florida 12 years. This is year 8 for Kirby. And then you look at Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama. I mean, there's a reality to this. And as I pointed out earlier in the show, Alabama's lost two or more games three of the last 4 years. That's never happened for Nick Saban at Alabama. I mean, and a part of it may be the parity of the league, but I think it's right for Kirby to pay those respects. I mean, I appreciated hearing Nick Saban speak today. He is a gifted speaker, and whether you agree with him or not, he really is captivating and holds an audience. And, you know, maybe he's not winning championships like he used to, Paul, but he's still an entertaining guy with a lot to offer the sport.
As many of my Alabama friends remind me, since 2007, Georgia has beaten Alabama a grand total of one time, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The ships have passed in the Gulf of Mexico behind us, according to our guest, Mike Griffith. Mike, thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Paul.
Can't wait for the next time. We'll be right back.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, let's see what we have. We got Kirk Bowles. Texas has arrived here, as we mentioned. Scott Strickland from Florida. 40 and Dellinger. Rabelais on LSU. That's the next hour, and after that, it gets pretty wild. Not to say it hasn't been so far, as we are back here at the beach talking about what has been going on today. Alex Scarborough about to join us, unless he wants to go down there. I'm not sure what they're playing, Alex, but it looks about as coordinated as me outside trying to play ball. Alex, you've been covering this thing for a couple of days now. Everybody's trying to figure out the games within the games. Some believe that Greg Sankey is just having fun, letting it all play out in the media for entertainment, and at the end of the week he'll get what he wants. But what does he want?
I think he wants 9 games. I don't think he's making much of a secret about the fact that he thinks this is a league that should be at the forefront and should be moving forward and not be standing pat with 8 games. I think he wants the best schedule he can put on TV and in stadiums across the SEC, and the best way to do that is with more games. Whether it's signed, sealed, and delivered, I think that's up for debate. I don't think it's in a better place than it was a few months ago. I'll say that. I think there's been, as soon as the 3 permanent rivals started leaking out, I think the problems started coming, and it's a question of whether this week they can corral the support they need and get it where it needs to go, or whether Greg is going to have to step up and say, look, guys, here's what I want. We need to figure out a way to get it done. Otherwise, we're sticking with 8.
I'm aware you work for ESPN, so I say that in full disclosure before I ask the next question, but during this episode here, there are a lot of different meetings. I haven't seen everyone here, but I saw 2 of the most senior ESPN executives in there, and there may even be beyond them, but I'm talking C-suite executives. They'll be asked questions about the same thing that we're talking about. Can you enlighten us, or is it possible to ask one of your bosses whether ESPN is going to participate in this?
I'm going to take a page from a lot of coaches and say that's above my pay grade, and I think people might actually believe it when it comes to me and not some of these guys making multi-millions dollars. I think the interesting part is going to be if ESPN doesn't budge, does Sankey still want to push it forward? Does he have enough support? And from talking to him last night, he insisted time and time again that money isn't the driving factor, and he believes that money doesn't lead, it follows. That was, I think, the phrase he used. I don't know if it's verbatim. So if it's not money now, could it be more money on the back end? I think that's going to be his argument in the room to those people who want to be pushed by ever X millions of dollars. I don't know if it's the tipping point, but it's definitely going to be part of the conversation.
How likely or unlikely is it that we see a temporary 8-game schedule for 24?
I think there's a decent chance of that happening if they can't come together this week. Okay. And as I said, I'm not sure they're going to be able to. Okay. Now, Greg said, look, I'm tired of I don't want to circle the plane with this over and over again. I want to land the plane. I want to get it done. But if he's not willing to stand up or has the power to stand up and push people into it, you got to get the vote someplace. And the vote is that tight, from my understanding. No matter what, all these coaches are going to talk to us today and tomorrow and say, I stand up for this, I stand up for that in terms of 8 or 9 games. It's going to be the vote in the room, and sometimes it's going to be different.
Yeah, and for those at home, I don't want to take anything away from the coaches that we love talking to, but they are not part of the decision.
Yeah.
They are paid lip service, but their vote does not matter. You have the football coaches meet, they meet with the athletic directors, and then I think the athletic directors then meet with the president, and that's really Thursday and Friday. Friday after the light, after we're gone, and a handful of people like you are still around, that's really when everything gets done.
Yeah, and a lot of head coaches leave at that point.
Yeah.
Now, with the exception of Kirby Smart and maybe Nick Saban, that's where you start to wonder about the dynamics between president
right.
to head coach. But you're right. On the whole, it's going to be the president who's there beyond whatever the head coach is, and they're going to make the best decision. And when we talk about the money piece of it, that's, I think, where the biggest part of that, not the competition, not the bowl eligibility, it's going to be for those teams that are on the fence, those ADs asking, the presidents asking, how much?
Yeah, and these rooms are like juries. All of a sudden you start looking around, and all it takes is one switch, and everybody's, oh yeah, because, I mean, the SEC likes to pride itself on everything is unanimous.
Yeah. They'll want to come out with a unanimity.
Yeah, they will always be unanimous.
And the interesting thing when you talk about that is Nick Saban wobbling on 8 versus 9 for the longest time. Nick has been in favor of 9 games. And
hard,
you see
hard
him
nine.
Wobbling. If they can keep him on board or get him back on board, or do the dominoes fall from there? Because if you lose Nick, it's a dicey vote.
Yeah, correction. I meant there are 13, maybe 12 SEC coaches that the ADs and the presidents don't listen to. There are two that they have the final decision, and you just named the one. Alex, thank you. Always great to see
My
you.
My pleasure.
We have a big couple of hours ahead, including some of those decision makers. They will be with us live.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.